Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Oh, and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. But we're going to be talking more, not just about mind power, but the fact that we as individuals are a part of this wonderful experience of life, and how, through becoming aware of our very environment that we live in, we can actually empower ourselves nutritionally through medicinal plants. My guest today, Guido Massi, is a man that has put together a phenomenal publication. If any of you listening are interested in promoting well-being, if you're interested in herbs, if you're interested in history and how we have learned the benefit of certain herbs, etc., you will find this book wonderful. It's going to be hard to put down because he weaves stories in with it, as well as very useful recipes for tinctures and other things. But it's more than that. It is a comprehensive awareness of how we can keep an understanding that we need to keep. If we don't have it, we need to develop it so we can keep it. An awareness of how everything really is interconnected and how our physiological well-being, as well as the well-being of our planet, is so, so important. Guido, welcome to the show.
Donna, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
I really was surprised. I get a lot of material that crosses my desk, and health, nutrition, wellness, the environment, anything and everything I'm interested in. I was so impressed with how you brought in history, herbology, and also the practical application that the everyday individual can use. You don't have to be a pharmaceutical specialist. And when I say that, I mean a good pharmaceutical trained individual. They have to be very, very well chemistry. And since everything comes from the plant kingdom, even though so much of what we have out today is synthetically synthesized, you bring out this in your wild medicine solution, healing with aromatic, bitter, and tonic plants. You are an herbalist. You're a clinical herbalist.
Yeah.
You educate people about this, and you love doing gardening. You're a garden steward. You are the co-founder and co-director of the Vermont Center for Integrative Herbalism, and there are organizations like the American Herbalist Guild, the American Botanical Council, and one I had not heard of, the United Plant Savers.
Mm-hmm.
What was it that caused you to develop such a curiosity, number one, and an enthusiasm for exploration into the diverse and utterly amazing world of herbs and plants?
Well, I grew up in Italy, and my family is, the bulk of my family comes from the north of Italy, kind of in the middle of the arc of the Alps. And their herbal medicine is, I think, still pretty woven into the culture and
mm-hmm.
into the day-to-day. We still use plants for cold and flu before we, go to the pharmacy looking for an over-the-counter medicine, for instance. But I moved to the States, which is where my mom is from, when I was about 14, and I kind of didn't recognize right away that there was this piece of my cuisine and my culture that was missing. But after a few years, I kind of came to recognize that this connection to medicinal plants was not something that was around me in the same way as when I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of longing and missing of that cultural piece was a big part of it. But to tell you the truth, Donna, what I love about herbal medicine is that it took these two spheres of interest in my life that I thought were completely diametrically opposite, and it gave me the ability to synthesize them. And those two spheres are a lifelong interest in magic and myth and story, and cultural history, which I think is very valuable when we're trying to know ourselves and know how we work and know how we connect to this planet. And then this interest that I've also had since I was little in chemistry and biochemistry and sort of the scientific, quote-unquote, way of looking at nature and the human body. And I was pursuing these fields of study kind of, you know, in two entirely separate worlds and separate departments at university. And it was a struggle for me because it's like, how will I be able to pursue organic chemistry and also delve into Western mythology and Eastern philosophy and be able to devote time to these two disciplines that seem so separate and different? And in herbal medicine, you see a synthesis and a fusion of these. And that's what really was a great gift to me. It's like, I can pursue herbal medicine, I can learn about biochemistry, I can learn how these plants work on a chemical level, and then each one of these plants is alive and carries with it a very rich history and a great amount of folklore and mythological context that satisfies the sort of mythopoetic and spiritual yearning that I have. And lo and behold, it also brings back this cultural element that I grew up with that I didn't really even realize I was missing. And so I'm very grateful to have discovered herbal medicine, and that's part of why I'm so passionate about it.
Whenever you start to talk about herbal medicine in mixed company at social gatherings, people often expect that you're going to be this, they've got this image, and I'll just use these words, of someone that walks around in burlap sack clothing that has a funny-looking hat on their head and never, ever communicates with people in the real world, which obviously is, in their view, so sophisticated. And I just have to laugh. I really do. Because your book demonstrates how people like yourself very much are aware. And it's chemistry. And when you get into the persona of everything that is growing around us, I was out walking yesterday. I'm in the Pacific Northwest. And our diversity of trees and other things, if they're not cut down by many people, when you're able to look at them, you realize that diversity contributes. There is an interconnection that is just utterly, utterly amazing. And this is something on all levels of life. And in our world today, we've tried to create what I call a homogenized environment. And that doesn't work. It literally creates, in my view, a starvation, a deprivation. Because without the diversity, it just isn't going to survive. I mean, this is something that I think anybody in medicine, if they study the human body, they find how important diversity is on many levels. Here you are. You are a man that has dedicated your life to studying plants and understanding how important the diversity is. And that is part of the reason that you wrote about healing with aromatic, bitter, and toxic plants. And I have to tell you that when I was going through your book and I was reviewing some of the materials, I went into the chapter on bitters. And I said, oh, my goodness, this chapter is just absolutely amazing. But let's touch on a couple of things before we get into that chapter, because you have so much wonderful information in this book, and I'd like to share some points of detail. What is the difference with a tonic, the bitters, as you call it, the tinctures, the teas? Give a little bit of a background on this, because I know in Asian medicine and among the Italians, I've got an Italian background, and always with the Italians, it was food. Your food, you want to enjoy it, you want to have conversation, you want to be sure that you have a little bit of everything. And one of the things that was in the Italian patterning when I was growing up was you always had your salad, not at the beginning of the meal, but you always had it at the end of the meal. It wasn't a large portion. It was the opposite of the way we in America have our food. And when I went through your chapter on bitters, that showed some of it. But let's go back to those items that I've just asked about, the teas, the tinctures, tonics, the teas. Give us a breakdown on that. What's the difference with those?
Well, herbal medicine, you know, is a very rich and a multi-layered art, and I often say that multiple lifetimes can be spent in learning it, but that doesn't mean that it can't be really, really simple, too. And I notice this in kids when we do herb walks or when I will give presentations to young audiences, you know, even four-year-olds. They recognize immediately if a plant has power or medicine in it, and especially the aromatic plants, they'll detect right away that a mint has a strong smell, or they'll be attracted to a rose not only because of its color but because of its smell, or the lemony scent of lemon balm. So it can be really simple to use these plants, and one of the easiest ways to do it, and why I've chosen some really accessible examples in the book, is to make sure that folks we'll try at least just one aromatic, one bitter, and one tonic plant in their life. And if you just do that on a daily basis, you will see incredible health benefits. And an aromatic plant might be as simple as just, you know, a cup of peppermint tea or a cup of linden tea. A bitter plant might be something like even just eating bitter dandelion greens after a meal, or radicchio along with some of them, or endive, as a way to kind of prevent indigestion and correct heartburn by eating these small portions of bitter greens after a meal, as you mentioned, is done in Italian cuisine. And then tonic plant can be as simple as half a bar of dark chocolate on a daily basis. And even
a tough one.
Yeah, hard medicine to take, right? Even if you just do that, if you just include them as part of your diet in a mindful way, you do a couple of things. You harness the sort of chemical benefit, the physiologic benefit that I discuss in the book. But you also, as you were saying, Donna, increase the biodiversity of your diet substantially by incorporating these plants that are not hybridized. As you said, you know, the idea of homogenizing our diet and trying to sort of control all the variables in food production, often for taste and financial reasons, has unfortunately dramatically decreased the diversity that we're exposed to. From somewhere over 100 plants supplying 80% of our calories at the turn of the 20th century to only about 8 plants supplying that same amount of calories at the turn of the 21st century, and heavily and highly processed. And again, you know, I'm not saying that everyone should go around with a burlap sack and a crazy hat on their head by any means. I think we can enjoy the benefits of modern culture as long as we make sure that we are tasting and incorporating even just one of these medicinal plants into our life on a daily basis to restore biodiversity from a food perspective. Now, if you want to make things a little more convenient, I do talk about some preparations that are really, really easy to make. The tincture, for instance, is a way to extract the power of bitter herbs, for instance, like a dandelion root, without having to, you know, keep them in your fridge and chop them on a daily basis. And it's really simple. You just take some of these bitter roots, chop them and steep them in an alcohol solvent like vodka or brandy for about a month. And then you strain it and you can bottle it. It's very cost effective. And then you will have, you know, 10, 15 drops of that before or after a meal to help deal with digestive issues or blood sugar control, for instance. And then there also are some ways of preparing tonic plants like blueberries or hawthorn berries that I talk about that's basically making a jam. It's not really complicated. It's cooking these berries down into a paste and then either freezing it or, if you know how to canning it so that you can preserve it long term. And the goal there is to make sure that it's easy for you to experience on a daily basis, or at least, you know, most days out of the week, because that's how you're going to get benefits from these wild plants, from these medicinal plants.
This is an interesting statement when you talk about the berries, for example. I'll share a quick story with you. In Alaska, which is obviously far north, and you only have about 3 months, when you get up into those northern climates, if you are lucky, 3 months where you can grow and you can harvest berries. And the Alaska natives, that's one of the things that they will look for. They'll try to get to the berries before the bears do so that they can dry them. And then during the winter, that was what they would consider a sweet that would give them their level of vitamin C. Well, what occurred with a young couple that moved up into the far north, they were not aware of nutritional needs because of the long winters. And as it turned out, as a Christmas gift they received during winter, they got this huge package of preserves which were berry preserves, raspberries, blackberry preserves, this type of thing. And I'll never forget the woman talking about how she had not been aware how important vitamin C was. And because of those preserves, which they totally consumed the entire amount during winter on their bread or whatever they would put it on, she said they were able to be healthy during winter, where otherwise their vitamin C levels would have been very, very low, because during the spring and or during the summer, when the berries would come out, then you eat it. And she had started doing some reading about nutritional needs, especially during long winters. And she said, my goodness, if we hadn't had those preserves sent to us, we would have been in deep trouble. And lots of people, when they became aware of how to can, that's exactly what they did. My grandmother did that. And that would supply the fruit during the winter. She lived in Virginia. And you could not, there was a time when the winters were really bitter there, more so than today. And that was a way of conserving nutrition. And this is something that people were doing. They either put it in sugar or they did something. And you bring out so many good points here about how you can improve things. And I was fascinated with your story of the Santa Maria Novella, the water of. Tell us that story and what that's all about.
Yeah, so we were wandering around in Florence, you know, that great sort of capital of Tuscany, in kind of the central part of Italy, and, you know, wandering from alley to alley, and there's this, the great sort of cathedral of Florence is Santa Maria in Fiore, but right next to it, you know, a few blocks down, is this smaller church called Santa Maria Novella, which is kind of a bit of a monastery, and, you know, folks would hole up in there for long periods of time, monks would, and they would study, in large part, pharmacy, which, again, you know, in the 13th century, in the 12th century Italy, that was herbal medicine, because that's really the only pharmaceuticals that were available to us at that time. So these monks were studying pharmacy, and they hit upon this distillate of peppermint. And basically what they did is they would extract the leaf of peppermint in big vats by sending steam through it, kind of the way you would with an essential oil, and concentrating the volatile components, the aromatic components of the peppermint leaf, into a kind of a watery slurry of essential oil and water. And this mixture, technically known as a hydrosol, became very, very popular and was marketed, I would say, about as far and wide in Italy as it could at the time. It made it down to Rome, and the Pope became enamored with it, granted a special license for producing and exporting this stuff to the monks of Santa Maria Novella. And this is basically a strong, aromatic peppermint water. And it was used for everything from, you know, your everyday belly aches and spasm in the belly, but it was also really used for what they called hysteria, or, you know, feeling out of sorts and frantic and anxious, which especially for, I think, some of the ruling elite or nobility of the time was a pretty common complaint. And the Santa Maria Novella water was turned to time and time again, to the point where it's still famous to this day. And you walk into the apothecary by their medicinal herb production garden that is, you know, very fragrant and typical, you know, sparse geometric Italian courtyard garden surrounded by these marble columns and terracotta slate roofs. And you can really even see the monks still picking the peppermint from there and distilling it into this water that is marketed now across the world. I mean, you can find it in New York City, Santa Maria Novella water in its special bottles with the seal that was granted to them by the Pope in the 13th century for marketing this stuff. But it really speaks to how important the use of these aromatic plants, in particular peppermint in this case, was for managing tension, anxiety, and mental health, and why this water became so popular and so important.
Well, you actually give the recipe for this, and you talk about the process that someone could actually do in their own home. And this I love. Now, I know the Italians love their wines and they love their liqueurs, but I had not been consciously aware of the liqueur that they would consume after a meal to help digestion. And most people know that as individuals get older, their digestive system is not necessarily as efficient, depending on how their lifestyle has been. But elderly people often have a very difficult time assimilating and digesting food well. And the Italians, we know, they love their food. They believe the food is the basis for wellness. But this particular process of developing what you'd call a bitter liqueur really made a difference. Now, you mentioned the one about the peppermint. That's not a liqueur. Those are drops that you can take. But let's talk a little bit about those liqueurs, because you go into that in quite a nice level of detail.
Yeah, so this is definitely something that has been part of plant medicine systems across the world, but it really, I think, was brought to a fine art in Europe, and like you say, especially in Italy. And I remember when I was little, my dad would pull out the bottle of Amari, which is the Italian word for bitters, and try and get me and my sister to drink a little, and, you know, it was pretty intensely bitter stuff for a young kid, and I don't remember it fondly, but now I've really developed a taste for this, and I can really see why the older gentleman at the bar, or, you know, after a three-hour lunch at the trattoria would, you know, big plate of pasta, a large plate of meat and vegetables, and then cheeses afterwards, why they'd bring out this bitter liqueur while they were sitting there and digesting and relaxing in kind of the soft afternoon light. It's because it really can help control indigestion and especially heartburn when taken after a meal in a very rapid and effective way. And it does this, unlike modern antacids, not by suppressing acid production and suppressing digestive function, but by working with the digestive process and really making sure that the food that you eat stays in the compartments where it's supposed to be and gets completely and fully digested. So you see less irritation, less food sensitivity, and also just a general sense of comfort and pleasure from consuming these. And the basic recipe for an Italian amaro, or bitter, follows the same template that has been around for thousands of years. And it's the idea of using mostly some really bitter things that kind of taste like poison, but are completely non-toxic, things like gentian root or centaury, or even something simple like artichoke leaf or dandelion root, mixing with it a little bit of something aromatic, be it orange peel or ginger or fennel seed, something that has a bit of a smell to it to also improve the flavor. And then a lot of times Italians will put just a touch of sugar or something in there to kind of counterbalance the bitter. And you'll see this in some classic Italian amari like Barolo Chinato or Fernet Branca that have a little bit of sweet. Some of your listeners might be familiar with an Italian amaro known as Campari, which is an orange peel bitter that is pretty common even in this country. But the general idea is you can take these before you eat if you want to kind of generally reduce overeating and control sugar cravings, reduce the amount of carbohydrate you consume, or you can take these bitters after eating to help with symptoms of heartburn or indigestion, discomfort after your, you know, big lunchtime meal. And this is a go-to remedy, especially, as you say, when digestive function begins to flag as we get older, where people will turn to them and really experience great benefit. And this is why these kinds of things have stuck in the culture and have been a huge part of the Italian meal forever and are still to this day part of the meal. It's really a shame, I think, that we don't see it more often in the American diet, because I think we could handle a lot of stuff like fast food and processed food a whole lot better if McDonald's, for instance, gave everyone a little shot of bitters along with their value meal, although I'm not holding my breath for that one.
I don't think you're going to be. I'm glad you said that last statement, because it's not going to happen at McDonald's. But what I was intrigued with, because you are a wonderful storyteller, and obviously you enjoy weaving the stories into the tapestry of knowledge that you're giving about herbs and the bitters. But I want to go to the chapter on bitters, because I found it absolutely wonderful. This, in and of itself, we could talk about for hours. But what I wanted to talk about was the man, one man. His name was Mithridates Stathis, I could be mispronouncing that, Upador. And I never knew this guy even existed. And in your book, here he is. And this is a man who had paranoia about poison. And because of him, we learned about antidotes, all kinds of stuff. One man's paranoia is a world's blessing in so many levels. Talk about him for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think paranoia is putting it mildly. This guy had his father, who was king of the kingdom that spanned an area we now know as Turkey. So it was called Asia Minor a couple thousand years ago, right next to Greece there on the south shore of the Black Sea. His dad was king, and this guy Mithridates saw his dad poisoned and killed when he was not even 12 years old. And this must have been quite a shock for him, as I could only imagine, especially since we really think now from the historical record that his mother was the one who poisoned his father in order for his older brothers to be able to accede to the throne. So the conspiracy and the deception and the backstabbing that must have been going on at this court, you know, would rival that of any sort of medieval monarchy or story of Henry V even. And Mithridates kind of came into his own in this very, I would say, somewhat toxic environment. And that's why I love his story. His life itself is a sort of an allegory of the way bitter plants can help us to counteract toxicity in general. And so his life was loaded with toxicity and challenge, not only from his family and from life at court, but he was struggling throughout his entire life. You know, once he poisoned his mom and poisoned his brothers and became king himself, he struggled his entire life against the Roman Empire that was advancing from the west and trying to take over his lands. And he was very successful in repelling wave after wave of attempts at invasion from the Roman Empire. And he was held in high regard as a great warrior king for this reason. And as you can expect, people were trying to kill him and poison him and unseat him from his throne in many, many different ways, but he kept repelling these over and over again. And we think a big part of that was because he actually developed this herbal formula, which was called the Mithridate, named after him, eventually it was called Theriac, that really helped his body more effectively and completely detoxify poisons that might have been in his evening meal. And he kind of hit upon this formula almost by chance, but it turns out to be very similar to the recipe for the Italian Amari. It contains some very, very bitter plants, a little bit of strongly scented and spicy plants like cinnamon and fennel and even frankincense and myrrh and calamus reed, and then some special ingredients like St. John's wort. And what he found was that if poisons tasted really, really bitter, you know, like deadly nightshade or strychnine, some of the worst stuff that you could have given someone at that time, then maybe if you could eat something that tasted like a poison but wasn't toxic, your body would become stronger and sort of more immune to the toxin itself. And he experimented on animals, he experimented on servants, and I'm sure a lot of people fell by the wayside in his experiments. I don't think this guy was a real pleasant fellow, you know, by any means, but he did hit upon this idea that you can fortify yourself against toxicity, whether it be from a poisoner or the toxicity of the modern world, in our case, by consuming these intensely bitter plants. And what we know now, and that's why I love herbal medicine, right? It has this rich story, but then it also has this pharmacology and the modern
I'm going to want to stop. Will you stay with me for a little bit longer so we can hear the rest of this story?
Oh, absolutely.
Wonderful. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to hear more about this man that was in a position of power, what he did, and how a physician, an herbalist, a person of great renown, whose name was Cratius, is behind, along with his king, much of what we know today in herbology. We're going to find out about this and more. Don't go away. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be right back.
Do you have a product or service that you would like people to know about? Internet radio is a powerful medium that can assist you in reaching people who like to shop online and pass by electronic word of mouth information about you, your products, and or services. The Donna Sebo Show reaches around the world, and you can be part of that enterprising network. For more information, contact Vision Broadcasting via Donna at DelphiInternational.com
or call 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
If you are an author and would like to be a guest on the Donna Sebo Show, please send a review copy of your publication along with a press release to the Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. Allow 6 to 8 weeks for your material to be reviewed. Again, the address to send your material to is the Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497.
Hi, we're talking with Guido Massi, the wild medicine solution, healing with aromatic, bitter, and tonic plants. This is a book that once you start reading it, you're going to have a difficult time putting it down. And if you're like me, you're going to have a highlighter, and you're going to dog-ear certain pages, and you are going to highlight those sections that really grab your attention, because it is going to introduce you to information that I bet you have never known about. And that's what we were having to pause before we took a break and find out about this ruler and also a phenomenal doctor who was so knowledgeable in his time about roots. His name was Critias. Let's talk about both of these men and their relationship, because this is something, this root doctor was amazing.
Yeah, he certainly was. Where we left it off, Mithridates, the king, right, had just succeeded to the throne, most likely by poisoning his mother and poisoning his brothers so that he could be in a position of power. And so needless to say, he was very worried and paranoid that the same thing was going to happen to him. So he had this idea that he could try and find plants that tasted very bitter, tasted as bitter as the poisons that he had tasted, and in so doing could fortify himself against potential poisonings. But he needed help, and so he teamed up with this root doctor and herbalist named Cratius, and they really concocted this antidote to all poisons out of the best of their knowledge and the knowledge of the people of the Mediterranean basin of the time. And Mithridates, the king, he took this every single day for the rest of his life. And it's credited for his longevity. You know, the guy lived well into his seventh decade, which was kind of unheard of at the time, especially mm-hmm. for royalty, especially in an area that had so much war and turmoil from right. the advance of the Roman Empire. But Critias was instrumental in this. He was the one that collected the knowledge and traveled around the countryside with Mithridates cataloging these plants that were going to be useful to make this antidote. And in fact, all of the great Western herbals from the European tradition, we think, are based on this first illustrated herbal that Critias put together for Mithridates' use to develop this antidote to poison. Dioscorides, who wrote De Materia Medica, a hugely influential text, probably copied wholesale large sections of Critias' herbal, and every herbalist since then has referred to Dioscorides. We still see him quoted today in some books on herbal medicine. So, unfortunately, this work has been lost, but it must have been an incredible manuscript, and I wish we could somehow, and I still hope that someday in excavations people might find this manuscript, because it contained the first recorded recipe for this antidote to all poisons. A little bit of bitter roots, a little bit of spice from the incenses of Egypt, and then secret ingredient plants like St. John's wort were all mixed together. And Mithridates took this every day. And what's interesting from the chemistry perspective, when we look at it nowadays, all of these bitter plants improve our liver's detoxifying power and mm-hmm. help us completely digest and metabolize everything we put into our body, not just poisons, not just toxins, but also the food that we put in our body on a daily basis. And so without really knowing about the chemistry, Critias and Mithridates came up with this antidote based primarily on taste and also trial and error, and it was actually incredibly effective. So for over 60 years, Mithridates fought against the advance of the Roman Empire, maintained strength in his kingdom. But finally, you know, Rome had just come off the heels of battles with Carthage. Their armies were swollen with new recruits and new slaves. They had a range of ships and resources. And sick and tired of dealing with this guy in, you know, the area we now call Turkey, they finally brought all of their military resources to bear on him and on his capital and drove him out of there into far lands of his kingdom, kind of on the eastern shores of the Black Sea. And Mithridates is out there, you know, feeling cornered. And he tries to rally his sons to his side to mount a counterattack on Rome that is now advancing with all of basically the military might of the Western world at that time. And his sons both betray him. They both betray him in the end. And I don't think this would have been hard to do. Like I said, this guy, Mithridates, the king, did not seem like a very pleasant fellow. He poisoned his mom. He poisoned his brothers. He led a life of struggle and revenge and paranoia. I don't know that I would have, you know, laid down my life in loyalty to him necessarily. Both of his sons betrayed him in favor of Rome. And he killed one of them for this, but he was not able to kill the second. And in the end, the Roman centurions encircle him and are basically right about to capture him. And he did not want to be taken alive. So he always had poison with him, you know, because he would spread this stuff around, I think, fairly liberally for his enemies' enjoyment. And he tried to poison himself in the end in order to not be taken alive by the Romans. But the true irony of the whole story is that because he had taken this antidote on a daily basis to protect himself, even the massive dose of poison he took in the end to try and protect himself failed, and he was not able to kill himself with his own poison, which to me is just the greatest irony of all for this very bitter life of this man who thrived on challenge but kind of took it too far. And that's the whole point about bitter plants, I think, is that they challenge our taste buds, they challenge our palate, they challenge our digestive system, and we've turned our back on that challenge because it just doesn't taste incredibly pleasant. But the old-timers sitting in the bar in Italy in the afternoon, they know that it's important to have a little bit of this flavor in your life for your belly to work properly, for your liver detoxification to work properly, and especially in today's culture when we're exposed to a range of potentially harmful substances, it is crucial that we have a little bit of this bitter flavor in our life on a daily basis. We don't have to take challenge as far as Mithridates did, right, where every moment of every day is a struggle and, you know, is based on bitterness. But we do have to have a little bit of that bitter flavor on a daily basis, because bitter, just like any good challenge, is the way we grow, the way we thrive, and the way we rise to the occasion. And that's what I love about herbal medicine, is that it says that human beings are truly wonderful beings, spiritual creatures, powerful creatures, adaptable creatures, and that rather than living our life in fear of what the modern world can throw our way, let's embrace it, but let's embrace it with these allies that we've always had, with these bitter plants, with these aromatic and tonic plants, because if we walk hand in hand with them, we'll find that we can handle and adapt very well to the craziness and toxicity of the modern world, and we can do it with an optimistic perspective rather than a fear-based perspective.
I agree, and you bring out a lot of information on chemistry and how one of the reasons why the ingestion of carbohydrates, as the refined carbohydrates, which have been maligned for I don't know how many years, I mean, historically, you go back into the aristocracy of Europe, if you really want to get down to the bare bones, even the wealthy in the United States, they were the ones that had the means to buy the sugar and the very refined foods, but they also paid a very high health price. And that is what's happening in mass today. And most people are not really aware that even though they might not be consuming volumes of food like we would expect somebody that is extremely obese would be doing, their bodies are not adaptable, dependent on their genetic package, to utilizing the carbohydrates, the refined carbohydrates, in an effective way. What will happen is that they find themselves getting fat very easily. So if they eat pasta and things like this, it's one of those factors of the physiological efficiency of the body and the way the body will store whatever it's not able to utilize. And that's where the bitters come in. And that's where they can really help the body, instead of stockpiling a lot of unnecessary stuff, utilize it. And also decreasing our appetite for that. And it's really an amazing read. You talk about the xenobiome, or the xenobiome, which it's a fascinating component. You talk about how alkaloids create the bitter flavors. And you go into so much detail in the chapter on bitters as to how everything is being affected by our lack of awareness of what we are doing to ourselves. And because of people like you, Guido, we are going to become more educated and more understanding. You give suggestions on how to grow certain herbs, whether you're living in an apartment or if you have a home and a nice backyard, or maybe you're a farmer and you have acres of land. This is something that we can become aware of. We can take little steps, like you've suggested, to enhance our lives. Now, your book, The Wild Medicine Solution, Healing with Aromatic Bitter and Tonic Plants, is so comprehensive, but it's a fascinating read. You've made it so that it's interesting, just like the history you were sharing, about someone that hundreds of years ago had an effect on our understanding of medicinal benefits of plants, of roots, how to develop certain things, what we can do. And I just think it opens up a world of awareness for anybody that wants to enjoy wellness in a phenomenally comfortable way. And your storytelling is terrific. Guido, what is the website people can go to find out more about your wonderful book and about what you do?
Well, I have, I'm one of the directors of a 3-year clinical herbalist training program. So we train folks in sort of the full range and depth of this art and science, which is herbal medicine. And you can find information about that at vtherbcenter.org. And in, you know, the resources section and the About Us section, you can find links to a lot of sort of free handouts and classes, information that I have available there, and also a connection to a website about the book that goes a little bit more into what it's about, and also some of the reviews it's received. So that's a great place to start.
All right, so the website, and it's only a keystroke away, is V like Vermont, vtherbcenter.org. You'll find out the information there, and if you're interested, not just in wellness, but if you want to understand why things are beneficial for you, for your family, for those that you love, your friends, even, I'd say, in some instances, with animals and even gardens. There's a lot of good information in here. The Wild Medicine Solution, Healing with Aromatic, Bitter, and Toxic Plants. This, or tonic plants, I meant to say. This is something that I think is just absolutely invaluable for a library. Hey, open up your life to a whole new level of understanding. Be an example for other people, and I think it will have an impact you could never imagine. Guido Masi. Guido is G-U-I-D-O. Masi is M-A-S-E. I want to thank you so very much for being my guest today.
Donna, it was a great pleasure. Thank you so much, and for all your good words and your good work.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a minute. Don't go away.
Have you ever had a paranormal experience, such as seeing a ghost, having precognitive dreams, out-of-body experiences, or other happenings? If so, Donna would like to hear from you. She's putting together a book of 100 stories from people who would like to tell their story. If you'd like to submit yours, send an email to donna@delphiinternational.com. Again, send your story to donna@delphiinternational.com. Be sure to include your contact information as well. Thank you.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural, and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I'm so delighted you're sharing this time with me. And I wanted to share a story with you about a friend of mine. You know, we were talking about the use of herbs and things like this. And this is a little bit of a nutritional explanation. My friend is in her 50s. And she said that she'd been having, and I know this for a fact because she would show me, how when she had problems with her nails. And this is a woman that really is into supplementation. She's really into nutrition. She reads and constantly is upgrading whatever she knows. We just have the greatest conversations when we get together. She shares what she knows, and I share with her what I've learned. And it's just a wonderful exchange. And she said that her nails, where you have the moon in your nails, well, there were ridges that were deep in her nails that were going horizontally across the moon area. It was very deep, and all of her fingers were like that. And she said she got concerned. She had determined, and we had talked about it, that it was a nutritional deficiency, but she couldn't figure out what it was. She went in for some tests. They showed her iron levels, all kinds of levels for nutrient balance were just fine. Nothing wrong there. And her doctor said, well, you know, her doctor is one of these rare doctors that really likes to keep up on nutrition and things like this. And Mary said, what is it? There's got to be something that's missing in my system. Well, her doctor didn't know anything about it. And Mary and I had talked about juicing and including a lot of dark leafy greens, which are like your kale, your spinach. And think about it, they're bitter. Your kale, spinach, collards. Anything, your cabbage, any of those greens, more of them. Women typically need more of them as they get older. So Mary and I talked about it, and she went out and she got a Vitamix machine. She had been doing research on it, and she got this. And by golly, do you know what she started to do? She said she didn't have much tolerance for cooking it or anything like this, so she used it as a juicer. And she started juicing, as we had discussed many times. I had suggested it to her. And what occurred is within 3 to 6 months, all of those ridges were gone. When she shared the information with her doctor said, well, number one, you're in your 50s, so you're not perhaps assimilating what you're taking in nutritional supplementation. She said it may just be going through your system. It's taking out a little bit, but not enough. So when she was taking in the dark green leafy vegetables, and these are typically root vegetables, think about them. They're in the earth. They're going to extract the minerals and the components that they transmute into the nourishment that we can absorb. And she would put a pear or an apple in with a little bit of fruit to sweeten it up. And she creates her own little mixture. And she said, my nails are fine. So she has made that a pretty regular part of her diet, not necessarily every day, but she has it a few times a week. And it's made a difference. And this is where the plant kingdom really helps us, because they are transformers in many, many ways. And that's why I think my guest today, Guido Masi, the information that is in his publication is so valuable, because we need to understand that though we're part of the animal kingdom, we're omnivores. We can take in a bunch of just about anything. And this has evolved through millennia. And the reason that we're able to do that is because this is what keeps us in harmony. So it's a balance. It's not being extreme about anything. It is having that harmonic. He's got information on ginger and all kinds of stuff in there. But I share that story about my girlfriend because it has literally transformed her well-being just by making a little bit of a change. Does she give up her cookies? No, this woman is one of the best bakers on the planet. She hasn't given up the cookies. She hasn't done any of that. But she has balanced her life with this nutritional cocktail that she makes. Actually, she makes it into a soup. And she said she blends it, warms it up, and that's it. It's ready to go. And she said a little bit of spice, salt and pepper, and she's just happy as she can be. And the difference is that her body is utilizing it because it's being absorbed rather than just being taken in a supplement form. She's getting the nutrients that she needs. Okay, telephone number if you'd like to chat with me, if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, call me at this toll-free number, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Well, I just absolutely love spring, as you know. If you're listening to me, you know I'm just always talking about everything that is growing and blooming and coming out in life. And I just feel like this time of the year is a good time maybe to clean out the pantry. You know, the spring cleaning feeling that we gals get so many times. I don't know that the guys get it, but we gals get it. And often that makes such a difference. It just makes everything feel lighter. It just is important. So washing the windows, doing the things that we need to do for ourselves is so very, very important. Now, I wanted to share a story with you today. Actually, I have quite a number of items that have crossed my desk, but I really, really feel that so many times we're given challenges in life. I don't know of anybody anywhere that hasn't had them. Mental, physical, spiritual, emotional, just seems to come with a package of life. And it's how we work with these challenges. And many times, it's so easy to say, I just want to give up. It's just not worth doing what we need to do. How many times have we done something like that when we're pursuing a career goal or an objective for our own wellness? Or maybe we wanted to change our lifestyle. We just say, oh, it's not possible. Oh, it's not possible. Well, forget it. Dump the attitude. Because things are possible. And sometimes that persistence, it's taking little tiny baby steps. Maybe you've got a financial challenge. It's taking those little steps, being persistent and consistent. I remember a lady that I met, she had wanted to drop 30 pounds. And so she said it took her, and when I met her for the first time, she just looked fabulous. And I said, wow, you're so nice and trim. And her husband had said in the course of conversation that we had had at a luncheon meeting that his wife had eliminated 30 pounds, and he was just so proud of what she had accomplished because she, one, felt better, and she looked better, and all this kind of good stuff. And when I had a chance to talk to her privately, I said, what did you do? And she said, well, I went and joined a particular group, and this particular group enabled me to keep myself focused. And I said, well, how long did it take you to drop this weight? And she'd carried this extra weight for a number of years. And she said, it took me over a year. And I thought, oh, my goodness, you know, this group promotes that you can lose this so fast and so on and so forth. She said, it took me a year. And when we had gone back after we'd had a chance with chatting in the ladies' room like we gals so often do, when we went back to the table, she was invited by her husband to partake of a certain array of foods. And she looked him straight in the eye and she said, I got news for you. It took me over a year of discipline to get to where I'm not putting on any more pounds, and I am not going to get into this food thing that you have. She said, I'm not going to do it. It's not worth it to me. I work too hard to accomplish what I've accomplished. And her story of persistence is a rather simple one about an item that so many of us moan and groan about. But remember, persistence, consistency, faith in yourself, realizing that sometimes it's the tiny steps of change that make a difference. Whether it's in your diet, whether it's working with money, whether it is building a new career, it's not necessarily going to be instantaneous. But if you're persistent, work with affirmations, work with the action along with the belief that you can achieve what you want to achieve, you might be surprised. Christ how it manifests itself in a way you would have never imagined. This is Donna Sebo. We're out of time. My goodness, won't you join me tomorrow? We're going to be talking about some pretty good stuff. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a magnificent day. Bye for now.
To the Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.